I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Ho, ho, ho. Hello and welcome to episode 109 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley, and as you can tell, it is our Christmas special 2013. No expense spared on the sleigh bells and so on. Hope you have, or if you're listening after Christmas, have had a good Christmas. David Cameron Walker is here. Merry Christmas, sir.
Merry Christmas.
And you just told me you've just been sat opposite Alexa Chung on the tube.
It's a bombshell
to start the show.
It was a good start to the day.
Fantastic. Shopping done? All organised?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much all done. I did it in an hour yesterday. Blitzed
Super.
It. With an hour left to go at Westfield yesterday afternoon, did it all.
Brilliant. Well, you know what? If you're listening to this show on Christmas Eve and you're struggling for a present, perhaps for someone, why not get involved with Audible? audible.co.uk/goingup is where you need to go. You can pass the time. If it's Christmas Day, you're sick of the relatives, you've retired away upstairs, free 1 month trial just for going to watch.
It's going to be a lot of iPads and iPhones given for Christmas this year, isn't it?
So absolutely.
It's a perfect thing to give it with them.
Just for going to audible.co.uk/goingup. And what do they get if they go to audible.co.uk/goingup?
Get a free audiobook from tens of thousands, pretty much every book you can ever imagine ever being written.
Absolutely.
It's an audiobook on audible.co.uk/goingup.
So it's free from them. Get on there, audible.co.uk/goingup. Before we go any further, the FSF
is
Awards.
The Bible on there?
I think it probably is. Yeah.
Good,
that's a hell of a long listen. The FSF Awards last week. Don't give away the result because we're going to play the highlights later in the show. But did you enjoy the evening?
Very much so. Absolutely.
It was chaos, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Absolute chaos. We'll have highlights of our night at the Emirates Stadium later in the show. Plus, coming up on the show, reaction to Eddie Bivroy losing his job. Watford have got a new manager. We have squirrel news from Loftus Road as well. We're also going to be speaking to Stephen Thurkill from the Mansfield and Ashfield Chad as the pressure grows on Paul Cox at the One Call Stadium. The Stags were 2-1 up against Accrington going into injury time on Saturday, but somehow they contrived to lose 3-2, and they are now on a horrible run of 12 games without a win, hovering above the relegation zone. So Stephen will be coming on later. But first, let's start in Gloucestershire with Cheltenham Town. The Robins lost out in the playoffs yet again last season, losing to Northampton in the semi-finals, and they started sluggishly this campaign, losing 6 of their first 12. But they've been unbeaten in 10 since, which is to ease the pressure on Mark Yates. They won 2-0 at Fleetwood on Saturday, and they're just 4 points off the playoffs. One man who was there at the weekend and watches them every week is John Palmer, who's a Cheltenham Town reporter for the Gloucestershire Echo, Citizen and Western Daily Press newspapers, and we're delighted to say that John is on the line right now to talk to us. John, thanks very much for coming on the show. First of all, let's start with Saturday, if we can. Was that Cheltenham's best performance of the season so far?
Yeah, I think it was the best performance all round, because Fleetwood, obviously a highly rated team, spent a bit of money and expected to be up there this season, and to go there and score right at the start and then defend as well as they did right to the end and then get one in injury time, it was a really good all round performance. So I'd say it's probably, there's been a few good ones and a few bad ones, but I think that was probably the best all round so far.
So 10 unbeaten now, a win over promotion chasing Fleetwood, who have been right up there all season, although it was a slow start this season. Do you think now there is a real realistic prospect that Cheltenham and Mark Yates can be in that playoff picture, if not automatic again this season?
Yeah, I think it's been a steady improvement after, like I said, a very bad start. And because Cheltenham have been up there the last couple of years and missed out in the playoffs, I think everyone just expected them to be up there again this season, but it didn't start how they planned. But they're definitely looking week by week. And I think the last 2 years, they've fallen away a little bit after looking like they had a chance of automatic promotion. This year, hopefully, they can peak at the right time and finish strongly, because that's been a feature of Mark Yates' management. They've started well and finish the season poorly, so hopefully it'll be the other way around this time.
And as we recorded this morning, I believe you've just been speaking to Mark Yates, the manager. What sort of spirits is he in ahead of the Christmas period?
Yeah, he's very confident. He's given his players Christmas Day off, which is
a rarity.
Reward for their recent form. Yeah, I think he kept them guessing, but he's told them today that they're off. So
no turkey, though.
he's given them a bit of instructions about what they need to do, what they need to eat or not eat. The more important game, and not drink.
Not drink, I think, would be the main one. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're all very dedicated, and all he wants in return for giving them Christmas Day off and a decent result against Exeter on Boxing Day.
Why do you think it was such a slow start this season? People are one of the cliches is the playoff hangover, not getting promoted in the playoffs again. Was there a lot of change over the summer? What can you put it down to?
Yeah, I think it was. I don't think it was so much missing out in the playoffs because I think it was much more disappointing the year before when they actually missed that Wembley 1-0 to Crewe 2-0 in the final. Sorry, and last year I think they realised they weren't quite good enough, and even though it was disappointing to miss out in the playoffs, I don't think that was the case. I think it was a case of rebuilding, losing a couple of really important players. Marlon Pack was probably one of Chelsea's best players last season. He left to join Bristol City in the summer. They really missed him, and it took them a while to replace him in midfield. They've got a player in called David Noble from Rotherham now, who started to play that role, playmaking role just in front of the back four, and he's made a big difference. And some of the other players who came in who had slow starts that the big things were expected of that had been promoted from this league before. People like Matt Richards, for example, in midfield, he's really starting to come into his own now. So it's just, I think it has another cliche, not so much a playoff hangover, but just gelling all the new players together and getting used to how they play. And I think that Mark Yates has found a system that works, diamond midfield with Noble just in front of the back four and then a player just off the front two. It's quite narrow, but it allowed the full-back space to get forward, and it's working really well now.
Just looking over the Christmas period now, the game's coming up. You've got Exeter City at home, the team directly below you in 12th position. Mansfield, who are struggling, not won in ages. Bristol Rovers, who have been down there. And then you've got, just after the new year on 4th of January, league leaders Chesterfield. So a bit of a mixed bag of fixtures, but certainly opportunity to pick up more points.
Yeah, I think if you get to Fleetwood and win 2-0, most people would be pretty confident going to the home games, but Cheltenham's home form hasn't been great this season. They've drawn their last four. They've only won two games at home in the league all season, so their away form has been a lot better. So I think one of the keys they are going to get up there in the playoff shake-up or even automatic promotion is to start winning games at home. And Exeter aren't a bad side. They had a really good start, and you know, for Cheltenham to be above them now really does show how they've dropped and how Cheltenham have improved, because a few weeks ago Cheltenham were nowhere near Exeter. So I think a couple of home results would make a big difference now. That's the key, I think.
I noticed that Mark Yates said, I think it was a month or so back, that he was sick of defensive mistakes. Has the defence tightened up a lot over the last few games?
Yeah, I think the defence has really improved since Steve Elliott came back from injury. He had a bit of a rest, and they thought he looked tired, and he was making mistakes. They gave him a few weeks off, then he picked up an injury, so it was a bit of an extended layoff. Came back in the FA Cup against Tamworth in the second half. Since then, he's made a big difference at the back. 35-year-old, played 500 games in his career, and he's held things together at the back. And the mistakes have been cut out. And they weren't doing that much wrong before in terms of tactics or getting outplayed by teams and getting thrashed. It was stupid errors costing them dear at really important times. So I think they've cut that out and just got used to playing with each other, and that's probably been the key to the improved results.
One of the new players that arrived in the summer was Jamie Cureton from Exeter City, who are the next opponents. I dare say he'll probably score in that game. How's he been doing this season? It's remarkable that his career seems to be at 38 now and still scoring goals, but perhaps not as many as Cheltenham Town fans would have liked this season.
Yeah, I spoke to him in the build-up to Saturday's game, and he said that he's really disappointed to have only started 8 games up to that point in the league. He started 9 now, but he scored 4 goals in that time, so he has got a decent strike rate, but he's been hampered by he dislocated his shoulder on the opening day of the season after scoring against Burton. That put him out for about 6 or 7 weeks. That really didn't help. Then he came back, he's had a couple of little niggles. So he has shown flashes of brilliance. He's got his 250th career goal, which is a really good finish against Dagenham, and he's scored a couple of absolutely brilliant goals that I don't think anyone else in the Cheltenham team would have even thought about scoring. But he's had these little niggles, which I think at 38 you're probably going to get that every now and then, especially coming back from a long-term shoulder injury. So he still looks fit though for 38. You know, he's not like he doesn't look like he's finished. I think he's got a lot more still to offer, but he hasn't really had a decent run of games to show what he can do. And the other strikers have done quite well in his absence, so he's got a bit of a battle on his hands to try and hold down a regular place.
But as is often the case in League 2, the Cheltenham squad isn't the biggest, and it does include a smattering of loan players, including David Noble, as you mentioned. But coming into the transfer window and the loan window after that, do you think there'll be an opportunity for Yates to add to the squad if he wants to? I mean, does he need to?
The last couple of years, he's had FA Cup runs to the third round against Tottenham and Everton, which brought in massive money, you know, relatively speaking, for Cheltenham. Allowed him to do quite a lot of business in January. This year, because they went out of the FA Cup in the first round to Tamworth, there's not much money available. The biggest challenge is probably going to be keeping Noble until the end of the season. That's something everyone wants to see, and I think Mark Yates is quite confident. Other than that, I think he's going to have to generate funds himself, but if he wants to get players in, he's going to have to offload players there'll be a couple that aren't featuring at the moment. They'll probably be looking to leave to free up a bit of money, but he's not going to be given much. The chairman's already said that, Paul Baker, that he won't be giving him as much as he got last year because they haven't had the cup run.
And has Mark Yates, by sort of doing so well and getting in the playoffs the last couple of seasons and getting close to promotion, put himself under pressure with the fans? Because, I mean, was there a lot of bad feeling towards Yates during this bad run to start the season? What is the expectation this season?
There was a bit of moaning and groaning at the season, but I think Yates accepted that because it was pretty poor and even worse than anyone expected. But Cheltenham aren't a big club in League Two. They finished, I think, they're 12th in terms of budget in the division, and they finished obviously in the playoffs the last 2 years. So, like you said, he has raised his own expectations, but he won't mind that. He's very ambitious. He's doing his UEFA Pro licence. He definitely wants to manage at a higher level, and I think he knows that if he does a good job here at Cheltenham, he will have a chance of doing that. But the fans are expecting this season. I think they need to realise that it's not easy to keep building when you lose a couple of your best players. It's not easy to keep being up there when they don't get massive crowds. You know, they haven't got somebody pumping millions and millions of pounds in like Fleetwood have. So if they can get up there again this season and be in and around the playoffs for third year in a row, I think that'd be a great achievement. But it shouldn't be taken for granted.
No, absolutely not. And I think, you know, it shouldn't be taken for granted just how good a job Mark Yates has done over the course of his time at Cheltenham. I think it's pretty much 4 years to the day since he took over as manager back in December 2009. He's making him one of the longest serving managers in the Football League now, surely. And you just look at Northampton, who were in the playoff final last season and now, you know, bottom of the Football League and have sacked their manager. It's not easy to come back season after season and keep being consistently good and punch above your weight.
Yeah, Torquay got to the playoff final 1 year. They lost the semi-finals to Cheltenham the next year, and they've really struggled this last season and this season. I think Northampton, again, are finding it difficult. So it's not easy to keep getting up there. And Yates is, 4 years, as you said. Cheltenham's longest-serving Football League manager now in terms of just in the Football League. He's just gone past John Ward's length of reign. And he has taken the club a long way forward in that time. When he came in, they were struggling on and off the pitch, financial problems, and he didn't have much money at all. He had a really small budget there, so they had to get themselves on a sound financial footing. And the first couple of years gradually improved, and then they had the run to the playoff final, and he's shown that he can really pick a player and attract a quality of player that Cheltenham probably aren't used to having with the money they throw around. He really has got a good contact, gets really good loan players in. And he gets a bit of criticism for his tactic, his ability to change the game with substitutions, but I think that's shown signs of improvement as well. So he's by no means perfect, but I think Cheltenham are lucky to have him. Obviously, he's a popular player at Cheltenham as well. So I think he's done a good job, and it shouldn't be underestimated.
Great stuff. John, thanks very much for coming on. Enjoy the busy Christmas period. I imagine you've got about 3 or 4 games, haven't you, in the next week?
Yeah, it's going to be good. It'll be wet and windy, but hopefully some points on the board.
Good stuff. Thanks, mate. That's John Brilliant. Palmer, who is the Cheltenham Town reporter for the Gloucestershire Echo, Citizen and Western Daily Press newspapers. And next, we're going to focus on a team who are 8 places below Cheltenham in the League Two table. Right, so to the East Midlands and a dramatic afternoon at the One Call Stadium on Saturday. Mansfield Town badly, badly in need of a win. A leading Accrington Stanley 2-1 going into injury time. However, a few minutes later, game over and they somehow have lost 3-2. And the natives are not happy with manager Paul Cox at all. 12 games without a win in all competitions. They also missed out on that chance to play Liverpool in the FA Cup when they lost to Oldham in midweek. On the line right now, we've got Stephen Thirkell from the Mansfield and Ashfield chat, and we had Stephen on the show earlier in the season. Stephen, you were there on Saturday. What was the reaction like at full time?
Well, pretty hostile, as you can imagine. I mean, everyone's obviously so desperate for the win. Mansfield, they're in a bit of a state at the moment, and obviously you look at the drop zone and they're getting ever nearer to it. 2-1 up in the 93rd minute, you think, thank God we've got the win. 2 minutes later, it's all changed, and a lot of anger at the team, a lot of anger at Paul Cox. It's obviously the frustrations, you know, they started the season so well, and it just gone to pieces. Obviously, the last time they won was the 28th of September in that memorable one at Chesterfield. They won that to go third. Accrington, at that time, the bottom of the league. On Saturday, Accrington go above them, so it shows you the extent of the slump.
There's a lot of anger towards the manager, perhaps, at the final whistle. There were boos. Cox is under big pressure. But surely, you know, the players have got to take a big slice of the responsibility for a defeat such as this. When you're 2-1 up with a couple of minutes to go, you simply should not be losing football matches. You've got to be professional and shut the game out.
That's it. And it's something that will really frustrate Paul Cox, obviously. It goes without saying he's going to be annoyed that they've lost. All through the season, this is something that he's talked about, of giving goals away at stupid times. He's like 2 minutes before half-time, 2 minutes before full-time, obviously in this case. in injury time. It's a message that he's tried to hammer home for many occasions of, as you said, being professional, keeping it tight, winding that clock down, and it just didn't happen. I think what makes it even worse is Akron snatched their 3 shots on target all game, scoring them all. That tells you your luck's not going for you.
And it's not as if, you know, maybe you could look at it, say, newly promoted team to the league. If it was an inexperienced team and hadn't played much, you know, the players hadn't played much league football before, then this is the sort of thing that perhaps could happen if they weren't used to the fitness levels and the step up in class, perhaps. But there's a lot of team players in their Mansfield team who've got league experience and they are actually quite experienced.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's early in the season as well. They're obviously really, really solid. That defence was, you know, it was watertight. But now they seem to, you know, they've conceded 3 against Oxford, 3 against Accrington. It's just the shape's come out of the team. It's the composure that's gone, really. Although there are players with the experience, as you mentioned. Obviously, Adam Murray's been brought back in, which is one of the massive talking points. They just seem to be losing the confidence, which isn't helping. Heads are going down and there's no belief there. I think there's a lot of sort of chopping and changing with the team lineup as well, particularly up front. It's not a settled team. It's not a confident team. And they desperately need that win to obviously try and get back on track. It looked like it was going to happen on Saturday, but it didn't. And now there's 3 away games out of 4, tricky games coming up, and you have to fear for Cox, I'm afraid.
Just you mentioned Adam Murray there.
This is weird, isn't it?
Pause on that for a second. This is something that passed us by actually when it happened back in November. But just doing research for this, I've noticed that Adam Murray, so the assistant manager, was sent on loan to Worksop Town in the Northern Premier League, and he's now since returned to the club. He had an argument or a public row with Paul Cox. That must be the only time ever an assistant manager been sent on loan to another club.
Definitely. I mean, it wasn't just Worksop. He actually went to Weymouth as well initially before going out to Worksop. I mean, for whatever reason, it's something that hasn't been particularly made public. Obviously, there was a massive fallout between the two behind the scenes. It seemed that they couldn't work together, and as a result, Murray left. I know that they obviously to sort of get rid of him, buy his contract out, and Murray said, I'm stopping at Mansfield Town, and he's eventually back now, but obviously he's done the rounds, and it's a bad moving away for Paul Cox. You know, I think they want to get rid of him. I think he's been told by Radford to bring him back along with Mickey Moore, another one of the assistants, and I guess that's shows that perhaps it's not 100% faith in Paul Cox from the people above him, that the fact he's bringing people back that Cox doesn't really want there. It's a shame that split happened. It's just a sign of how Mansfield Town are this season, it seems, because obviously Adam Murray is one of the legends of the club and proud captain of Mansfield Town. He gives it his 100%, and he was one of the, we've got iconic pictures of him on the pitch after the final whistle when they beat Wrexham to win the league, lifting the trophy aloft, everything's sweetness and light, and to say, he's one of the Mansfield Town heroes.
I was going to ask about Radford because we talked to you about him earlier in the season. Paul Cox has obviously got a lot of credit in the bank for getting Mansfield back into the Football League, but what kind of owner is Radford? Do you think he's the kind of owner who will stick with Paul Cox as things get much worse than this, or is preserving that Football League status that they've worked so hard to get back the most important thing and he'll make a change?
I think last week going into it, we said how this was going to be a pivotal week in terms of, if they beat Oldham, and getting Liverpool and, beating Accrington and getting some wins, getting another win under the belt, that things would start changing. I think this week coming up now, these next 2 weeks, are crucial. He's got 3 games, Rochdale, Cheltenham, Burton. If he doesn't get some good return out of that, I think they'd be gone, especially with the transfer window approaching. Rochdale's not going to be an easy game. They're doing well. Cheltenham are doing okay as well. And then Burton Albion coming to the one.
And they're doing all right. They're seven unbeaten as well. So that's 3 tough games.
They're flying. And then you're going down to Exeter instead of Liverpool on the 4th of January. Massive game there. And with the transfer window opening, Radford is a guy that will stick with his manager. He did that during the conference years when a lot of fans were calling for Cox to be sacked, during the promotion season. But as you say, with Football League status on the line, it's taken 5 years to get back there. You can't hang on much longer. If 12 games without a win turns into 15 games without a win, then the pressure will be, really cranked up from the fans, especially if they get turned up by Burton fairly easily at home. I can't see how they'll hold on to him, I'm afraid.
And when it rains, it pours. In the midst of this terrible run, last week, Sam Klukas, the top scorer, was ruled out for up to 8 weeks with ankle ligament damage. So, the transfer window certainly does look very important from that perspective.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Klukas obviously is a massive player. 11 goals this season. And if you go back below him, you're looking at sort of 4 or 5 goals as your next top scorer. So he just underlines the importance. And obviously, he's a player that's attracted attention of you know, rumoured to have attracted attention anyway at Forest and other teams in the Championship. He's a guy that he might not be experienced, but he's certainly got the ability and the little trickery that Mansfield Town need right now. They need someone to, you know, have that little bit of extra something special just to, you know, get a bit of magic and get them back on their feet. It's Ben Hutchinson as well, another one of the strikers. He's out for 6 weeks. So the look's not there. I mean, you look at the Wimbledon game, they drew 0-0 with Wimbledon. Their keeper pulled off three absolutely blinding saves. You know, even if he pulled off two blinders and the other one goes in, they've won 1-0. And I think one win, it can change it all, but it's where the Cops has got that time now.
It does show how ridiculously tight this division is, that stat that you said at the beginning about them being right at the top and then Accrington now overtaking them. You've seen, obviously, what are we, 21, 22 games in now? I'm sure you've seen quite a lot of teams in this division. Where do you think Mansfield sit amongst the league? I mean, where is their natural position, do you think?
Probably lower mid-table. I'm not sure they're quite bad enough to be relegated. I don't think they're going to get relegated. Obviously, they're in a terrible run, but two or three wins, you know, in fairly quick succession, they'll move back up that table and they'll be looking okay. I think it all comes down to the goals, really. They're so heavy. And Lucas, you know, losing Matt Green is the one that killed them, really. They've had to change the way they play completely this season in terms of not being able to just sort of put the ball over the top quickly and, you know, get into the channel. Defence is pretty solid. Central part of the midfield is pretty decent as well. It's just, it needs a bit of fine-tuning, I think. You know, a couple more players coming in the transfer window, a definite goal scorer and someone that can sort of get their feet on the ball in midfield. And they need to get that shape back, I think. We need to get that belief back. That's one of the keys we know in sport. You know, confidence and belief is a massive factor, as well as the ability that you've got. They're a better team than where they are at the moment. They're not going to be challenging for the playoffs, but if you look at Wimbledon last season, I think they avoided relegation last day of the season, didn't they? They're doing okay this season. They've stabilised themselves. I think a lot of that is what Mansfield Town need to do. Get this bad run out of the way, stabilise themselves, take a look at next season and just revamp that team and, you know, get a stronger squad.
Just looking back at some of the recent results and some of the comments from Paul Cox after the game, going back to the start of December, the 2-1 loss to Morecambe. After that game, Paul Cox said, "This is as angry as I've been since I joined the club. It's gone way past frustration. We've talked about injuries and suspensions, but this is basics. It's not like me to get annoyed, but the gloves are off." And there were some hard words said in the dressing room. So that was a month ago, and the slump still continues. Would the chairman perhaps look at that sort of comment and think, well, you know, you've said that you've kind of got stuck into the players now and enough's enough, but it still hasn't changed?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, as I said earlier, I think the fact that Adam Murray came back and Mickey Moore came back, that wasn't at Cox's desire, I don't think. That was John Radford, I believe, saying, look, we need them back. We need something to change. We need more stability at this club and bring Murray back with experience. I think it's almost a stepping stone. That's the first part of it. Second part is, are results changing after that? No, they're not. Sorry, I think we're going to have to part company. Are they changing? Yes. The job's yours to keep going on with. It's a massive week this week. It's massive, you know, obviously Christmas, we all know about Christmas and how many points you can get over it and how the games come thick and fast, but I can't see that run of not winning being extended for a long time. And Radford saying, you know, not saying things after terms, especially to say, you bring a new manager in, transfer window opens, what's the point in bringing him in February when you can't do anything and he's stuck with players that probably, you know, some of them players that aren't good enough.
True, something's got to change soon. Stephen, thanks very much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. Merry Christmas, mate. Take care.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
That's Stephen Thurkill from the Mansfield and Ashfield Chad talking about Mansfield Town. Right now, it's time for the latest in our My Club series, the bit of the show where we give Football League fans 125 seconds to tell us all about their club, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, the focus is on Leicester City.
This is We Are Going Up. My club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name's Damon Carter and my club is Leicester City.
So, Damon, do you remember your first ever Leicester game?
I do, yeah. It was Leicester v Barnsley, 1993 FA Cup, 2-2. And I remember distinctly, I think Steve Thompson scored the penalty, I think, and David Oldfield got a cheeky equaliser at the end.
I certainly remember my first ever Leicester game. We'll see if you do too. 95-96, last day of the season at Vicarage Road. Enol Heskey, 1-0 victory, sent us down and you went up. Or did you get... No, you got into the playoffs.
Yes, actually, it was... I'm going to correct you there. It was Muzzy, is it? He scored the header.
Oh, was it Heskey? Did Heskey cross it? And is it scored
that's
the header?
Right, yeah. Muzzy slotted it in. Yeah, there was 8,000 Leicester fans. Yeah, it was a great game that was. I remember that because we clapped the Watford fans off, players off, actually.
A little bit patronising, maybe.
Yeah, slightly.
Damon, you've obviously seen Leicester get promoted and win the League Cup and so on. What's been your favourite moment as a Leicester fan?
It's got to be Steve Claridge in the playoff final at Wembley.
Against Palace.
Because even though the League Cup was a year later, the moment that when Claridge scored the goal was just incredible, because it was a long ball upfield. Callack had just come on to go in goal. Shocking goalkeeper, really. Terrible goalie. And Julian Watts, I think, headed it down. And from my position, Claridge just walloped it. And I went, yes, brilliant, into the stands. And then it just hit the net. And I was like, oh, got promoted. It was just so surreal and so... you know, the elation was just amazing. Never forget it.
And got to ask a question about this season. Really impressed with the victory at the weekend. Do you think you can do it and go up automatically?
I think we can. But I think the main worry for me is that there's a lot of Leicester players coming out of contract at the end of the season. Good players like Kasper Schmeichel, Wes Morgan, I think David Nugent. I'm not 100% sure. And I'm just worried, one, that we're going to get our players nicked, and two, that they might suddenly start not wanting to play as hard as they can do because they're thinking about the next contract. That's my big question mark.
Interesting. Damon, your 2 minutes is up. Thanks very much for coming on, mate. Merry Christmas.
You too, mate.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
So we'll have another one of those on the show next week, and we'll talk some more Leicester in our weekend review in just a second. But first, DC, I'm going to hand you... this. We have some emails to share. So I don't know if you want to... I'll start off with... you start off with the first one. Basically, last week we asked people listening to this show internationally to get in touch with us via email, let us know where they're listening. And the first one is from Casey Moore.
Casey Moore, yes, all the way from the USA. Hi, guys. Just letting you know, even though we don't have promotion or relegation, the US has five divisions. Three pro/semi-pro and two amateur leagues. So, just you can see what we do in the lower divisions. Here are some scenes from Detroit City FC in the fourth tier of US football. So, we'll post this picture up on our Twitter.
It's magnificent.
It looks like something you'd see in the Bombonera.
It does.
You know, River Plate and Boca Juniors or Galatasaray. There's flares everywhere. There's banners. It looks
fantastic.
Yeah, very violent.
Fourth division.
Indeed. A great supporter of little club. I've been listening to your pod for three seasons now. Started in West Ham in a championship. Love the pod. Keep up the good work. Thanks very much, Casey.
Next one from Dennis Lindrews. Hi, guys. Season's greetings from Finland. I've been listening to your show for 2 years. Over here, you hardly see any Football League games on TV, but I'm happy just to listen to the banter on your show. That's what you want to call it. I developed an interest in club football 10 years ago, but it wasn't until the Borough went into the Championship that I realised I'm interested in the lower leagues in particular. And who can argue last day of last season was absolutely incredible. Proud to have experienced such excitement and drama whilst a lot of people over here didn't have a clue. Cheers, Dennis.
Wonderful.
That's Dennis in Finland. Next one is from AJ.
What's up, dude?
Great start.
My name is AJ and I'm a new listener from Los Angeles.
Wow.
I promised myself this year I was going to follow the Championship a bit closer and the Premiership a little less.
Good man.
So I did some research and came across your guys' podcast on iTunes. Excellent. My first episode was when you guys started out the pod with a spilled beer on a laptop and burritos in your mouth. At that moment, I knew I was onto something good.
Yep.
See? It was worthwhile all
sort
the time. We don't have any relegation battles in US sports, but I wish you would inherit that from your game. If your team isn't good, you simply suck. That's it. I'm a Raiders fan. Therefore, my team simply sucks. My favourite Championship team is, well, another team that simply sucks, Sheffield Wednesday. The story goes, I once met Jarvis Cocker on tour over here in LA. I went up to him and told him that I had one question and one question only. He looked at me and I asked him if he was either a Wednesday or a Blades fan. He said Wednesday. I've been a Wednesday supporter ever since. Are the Arctic Monkeys Wednesday fans, he asks.
They are, yes.
Brilliant. There you go. P.S. If you happen to be in LA, let me know. Our beer is just as good and the girls over here have bigger butts.
Cheers, AJ.
We're going to LA this year at any time?
Let's pencil it in. Hello to Luke Hacken. Guys, we have three fully professional tiers in the US, the MLS, the North American Soccer League, and the United Soccer League's professional division. We also have our own knockout cup competition that goes all the way down to the semi-pros called the Open Cup. As for who you should adopt as your lower division club, well, we've already adopted, who's the other ones? We've already adopted Detroit City FC. He says, I can't really say. The reborn New York Cosmos are still in the second division for the foreseeable future, but they don't need the support, really. So I'll say the Rochester Rhinos.
Big fan of the
Sounds
Rochester
like
Rhinos.
An NFL team, since they're the last lower division side to win said Open Cup. Thanks to all of you for doing what you do. It's great to be able to keep up with the goings on in the Football League from afar. And UTO. So I presume that's up the Owls. And the final
Another
one.
Sheffield Wednesday.
The final one, I think so, yeah.
Wow. We really do have a big support.
They do. The final one, DC.
This is from Tor Johan Norheim.
Lovely.
Listening weekly to your podcast from up in Tromsø, northern Norway. I don't support any football league team in particular, but I love the tension. I'm a big fan of the strong identity many lower league clubs possess. Would like to see Derby and Leeds back in the top flight next season, but it's not like draws or losses ruin my weekends. Sounds like the perfect way to be fun, isn't it? As for adopting overseas lower league sides, I really can't recommend any team from Norway. There's little passion and even less trivia to be found. Sad, but true. Love your show, though. Keep it up. Merry Christmas. Thanks,
Merry
Tor.
Christmas, Tor. So, if you're an overseas listener and want to get in contact, wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. Fill in the form or email us, wagyupodcast@gmail.com. Let us know which other overseas sides we should be adopting in the lower leagues. Now, we're going to take you back to Monday night last week at the Emirates Stadium in London, the Football Supporters Federation Awards 2013, hosted by the lovely Natalie Sawyer and the wonderful AC Jimbo James Richardson. We were nominated for...
He's a short man, isn't he?
He is, actually, isn't he? We noticed that in the bar before. And I've got to say, when we arrived, it was very, very posh. Felt extremely out of place. Champagne reception, all of that kind of thing. And we met a certain Premier League footballer who's been hitting the headlines. Here is a story of last Monday night and the FSF Awards 2013. Okay, so it's just gone 8 o'clock, Monday the 16th of December. We are at the Football Supporters Federation Awards at the Emirates Stadium. And Dave, would you like to fill everyone in on what's happened so far?
Right, well, we've just had some soup. But before that, we saw two of the awards.
Did you enjoy the soup, by the way?
I did enjoy the soup. Although, at first, they just brought these beans and tomatoes out and a little bit of, like, this puree. And I thought that was what they were going to call the soup.
Soup out of 10, Jim?
I'd say a solid 7. Like Dave said, I was a bit worried that all we were getting was soup and, like, parsley and spinach. It wasn't particularly impressive at the beginning. But, yeah, solid soup.
Soup rating, Carl, out of 10?
8.5. Cool. Oh, I think it's well worth a 9. Excellent soup. But, yeah, the two awards we've seen before the first, before the starter, was the Writer of the Year, which went to Henry Winter. And as I look at you now, Mark, with your new slightly too short haircut, I think you actually look a little bit like Henry Winter. You could be like his younger
brother. Sure that's a compliment, but okay.
Not quite as good a journalist as him yet. And also, of course, we saw the Player of the Year. They got that one out of the way early. The only player that was here of all the ones nominated was, of course, Luis Suarez, and lo and behold, he won. And we got the chance to have a photo with him before the...
We did. Now, Jim, you took the lead on this, didn't you?
Yeah, I went over and I thought, my in-law's a big Liverpool fan, so I thought, I can't not go and have a picture with Luis Suarez. Thoroughly nice man, though.
Very, very.
Yeah, so we went over, and I believe you asked him if he was interested in a move to Vicarage Road.
He didn't understand. Where, yeah.
How was your main course?
Absolutely wonderful. Better than the soup, in fact. I mean, I was the only one of all four of us to finish the every single last morsel on my plate. You ate so little, in fact, that they've only just taken away your plate after everyone else.
I ate 4:30. Jim, how was yours?
Yeah, massive. It was huge. Like, I don't go to many awards dues, but I can imagine the majority of the food is a little bit more dainty and elegant than pie and mash. But Football Supporters Federation, you know, it's exactly what you'd eat at a football ground, isn't it? So
it took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, indeed. Lovely bit of pie and mash at the end of it.
Now, how are we feeling about the actual award? Because it's growing ever closer. Do you think we've got a decent chance?
We've got no chance. Absolutely no chance. We are the Accrington Stanley of this event. Not meaning any disrespect.
Well, we've written him off 2 or 3 times this season.
it's a good point. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, Football Weekly should run away with it, but as Carl said, funny things have happened.
Can I invite to the stage a player who has won more than 100 caps for the England women's team, who represented Team GB at London 2012, and is Arsenal's Alex Scott. Winners tonight,
and the nominees for Podcast of the Year are. And the winner is Football Weekly. Well, that is very much the climax of this evening's event. There is still one award to do.
Okay, historic moment has just happened here at the Football Supporters Federation Awards 2013.
Which, from the two unfortunates, just come over and said that.
He has, but before that, the award for best podcast went to
Football Weekly.
Ah.
There's no shame in that.
Absolutely not. I mean, they've been doing it for years. They've got some of the best guys in the business, journalists, pundits on there. I mean, James Richardson, you know, we see him presenting these awards tonight, but we can all remember him sitting in a cafe in Italy, yes, looking over the Gazzetta dello Sport back when we were nippers back in the early 90s. So, you know, this shows what you're up against, and absolutely no shame in losing to them.
I'm sure DC was saying it was a fix a minute ago, though.
Yeah, off air, maybe. Opinions differ to on air, but no, as DC said, no.
Mate, come on, at awards ceremonies, there's a lot of people, when they don't win, they try and smile and clap and look at, you know, the cameras on them. How are you feeling?
I'm a little bit gutted that we didn't win, but at the same time, we've been beaten by the best in the business, so what can you say to that?
Tired formula, if you ask me. Should have stopped while they're ahead.
Like, too controversial opinion.
This does all feel a little bit like we are the proverbial non-league team, or maybe even a basement league two side.
We've got to our level.
We've drawn Arsenal in the third round. Yeah. We've had a lovely day out. Yeah. We're putting a brave face on things, saying that we've had the game of our lives, we tried our best, but deep down we're gutted.
So what's the plan from this point onwards then?
Drink.
Yeah, we've achieved this. Suarez we've ticked. Yeah. Award we haven't quite got. Well, who your target from the rest of the evening is? AC Jimbo, yeah?
Well, I'm more interested in Natalie Sawyer, to be honest.
Are we going to get her on?
She's a Brentford fan, that's why.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so the results of that later, perhaps. So how's the hunt for Sawyer going?
Not very well, unfortunately. We have looked at it, we've scoured the room, we've looked at the table plan, and she's nowhere to be seen.
I've seen that sitcom with Stephen Merchant, Hello Ladies. It's not like that.
She's gone, isn't she? She's gone. Jim. Got the last tube.
Where's AC Jimbo gone?
Jim was happy to see Olivier Bernard, I think.
Have we spoke to Bernard yet?
Never mind that we haven't, but we saw a collection of Newcastle United fanzines, didn't we? Just laying idle on a table over there. And they neglected to get Olivier Bernard to sign them.
But anyway, yeah, we've enjoyed the experience of being nominated for the Football Supporters Federation Award.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great, isn't it, to come down and be nominated alongside such illustrious company. It's a shame we didn't win, but...
But, I mean, that aside, we did just manage to have a chat with a number of the guys from the Two Unfortunates, which was really good.
More than two, though.
Yes, there is four or five Unfortunates, and more if you include us.
Trade Description Act.
Yeah. But it's good, because obviously we read their pieces online, we have them on the podcast from time to time, but you rarely get a chance to meet up with these guys. And, they have rather sensibly decided to leave and get the train home. We are,
in contrast,
Dave's just started drinking red wine, having drunk white wine all evening.
And it's lovely, much better than the white wine. I should have wine. I've been making a mistake all evening.
How was the hangover then?
Well, I didn't have to get up for work too early the next morning, so mercifully it wasn't that bad. But I think there's quite a few clips that probably didn't make the final edit.
Mate, there certainly is. Yeah. There was clips recorded after that point, which
were we singing a song on one?
We were.
For,
you were singing. It was for Jason Banton. You were singing to Pat O'Banton, "Baby
course,
Come Back."
Excellent. Why didn't that make it? That was the best bit.
Dreadful. It was dreadful. Right. Anyway, thank you very much to everyone who voted at the FSF Awards. We had a top night last week, and that picture with Suarez is on the Twitter if you want to see it. And of course, since he signed a new contract at Liverpool, very much turned us down, didn't he? Yeah. In terms of getting a move. Right. Let's start our weekend. Round up then, we'll start with the big game of the weekend in the Championship. QPR 0, Leicester City 1. Jamie Vardy with a brilliant finish, worthy of winning any game, I would say. And a huge win that for Leicester away from home. QPR's home unbeaten home record ended.
Yeah, big, big result for Leicester City. And I obviously saw the highlights of this game, and it looked... I think Harry Redknapp was pretty spot on after the game, actually. It did look quite even, and it was just, you know, one clinical finish which made the difference. QPR certainly had a lot of chances, didn't they? They looked like they're playing some really nice football. I thought Gary O'Neill in particular should have done better, perhaps, and Matt.
Well, he was lucky to be on the pitch, though, wasn't he, Gary O'Neill?
Yeah, there was a similar one from Matty James, wasn't there, second half?
I mean, in contrast to what Barton got sent off for, very
it's ridiculous. I was saying just last week, wasn't I?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Yeah,
concede themselves, and I think it's exactly the case again with Joey Barton. You know, you've got Gary Taylor Fletcher, who's a big hulk of a man going down, and he's not been elbowed there. Barton has just shrugged him off. It's part of a physical challenge. You're jostling for the ball in a throw-in. You know, he's not done anything wrong, and he's kicked the ball at him. Even that wasn't that bad, really, no. Was it? I think the referee sent him off unjustly there.
And well, the referee didn't have a great game, because when the squirrel came on, he didn't have a bloody clue what
David
to do.
David Nugent
did,
though, didn't he? Excellent.
Fantastic.
I've not seen him press like that for a while.
Yeah. So if you missed this, there's a squirrel on the pitch, and he wasn't going anywhere. Barton tried to chase him. David Nugent tried to chase him, and the referee was just, I stood there saying, well, we can't play with a squirrel on a pitch.
Excellent. So, well, I think you could
ridiculous
let him play on. But,
sequence of events.
I just am very impressed with Jamie Vardy this season, and I think it comes back to something that I've sort of mentioned a few times before, and it kind of increasingly dominates my thinking. When I think back to the start of the season, when ourselves and all the pundits and the fans and everyone across the nation predicts who's going to finish where, and you look at the teams like Leicester or Burnley, and nobody necessarily was predicting them to be up in the top three at this stage of the season, maybe Leicester more so than Burnley. But you look at them and you make your predictions based on what people have done before, and obviously that's all you can do. But one thing that we never take into account, the ability for players like Jamie Vardy or Danny Ings in Burnley's case,
improve.
To improve and be better. You know, you can have a season like Jamie Vardy coming out from non-league, going straight up in the Championship, where it's obviously going to take him time, and he's learned, he's improved, you know, from last season, and he's gone away full pre-season, second season in the Championship, and he looks a different player, and he's got so much better. Danny Ings has gotten over his injuries with Burnley and now scoring for fun. Just because you've been average at some point doesn't mean the die's cast like that forever. You can get better. And in these two players' cases, they're doing so this season.
Absolutely. Well, the last five teams to have been top of the Championship on Christmas Day have got promoted, and Burnley are top of the Championship after a 2-1 win against Blackpool. But not far behind them are Derby, 7 wins in a row. This is getting to a stage now where they're going to be right in the automatic promotion race.
They are. Well, they are banging it already. They're 3 points behind Burnley. And, you know, it's just confidence, isn't it? I think the players, the team's basically the same that was playing under Nigel Clough. And McLaren, as he was talking about after the game, the balance is there in the team at the moment. And you've got a player like Chris Martin is a perfect example. He's a fairly average striker. Again, what we were just saying, it can take a change of manager, a bit of confidence, and all of a sudden you, as a player, can produce things that previously you weren't doing week in, week out. And he looks on fire at the moment. You know, he's doing little back heels, little turns. He missed the penalty, but he still went on to, you know, to carry on and play a big part in the game.
Well, when we spoke to Steve Nicholson, didn't we, a few weeks ago, we talked about their upcoming run of fixtures, and they play Huddersfield and Barnsley over the next few days over the Christmas period, which are both winnable away from home. And then they've got the game with Wigan, who've just won 2 in a row, and then the big date with Chelsea in the FA Cup at the start of the new year, which I'm looking forward to. Elsewhere in the Championship over the weekend then, a new manager for Watford. And what's the name? How do you pronounce this?
Giuseppe Cennino, I believe.
Did you see the Instagram video of him?
Doing the old the song. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Very enthusiastic.
What have you made of his arrival? A 1-1 draw at Ipswich to start.
Which isn't a bad result, given that he's been on a decent run lately. But then, you know, Mick McCarthy's comments after the game did just underline, we battered them last season, took them apart. And then you kind of makes you realise just how we've changed in a year. But I mean, it's mixed reaction, really. I think we're very disappointed in the way that Zola resigned. Fair play to him. He left the club with...
Can I just say, by the way, we got the podcast out about an hour before he resigned. Yeah. I'm counting that as a success.
You know, and if he had been sacked, I think I and a lot of other people would have been disappointed and say it was the wrong decision. But because he resigned, it looks like a genuine resignation. You've got to say fair enough. If he doesn't think he's the right man for the job, then, you know, fair enough and we move on. And this guy, his track record on paper, you can look at it and think, doesn't look great. He's had a lot of clubs. I think it's like 13 or 14 clubs in 18 years or something like that over in Italy. But you've got to realise that Italian football, the culture is very much different, has historically, in terms of manager turnover, than English football, even though English football's probably catching that up. You know, a lot of the lower league clubs, I think he got Varese promoted a couple of times, who are a lower league club there. He got Siena, kept them up in Serie A, who are a very small club. And that, from those sort of lower league successes, he then went on to get good jobs with bigger clubs such as Palermo. But he was sacked after 3 games in a season there, and I think 2 of them were against Inter and Lazio,
okay,
if I'm right. Certainly against big clubs, and he got sacked after 3 games, which, you know, is madness, really. And then he actually got rehired later on in the season after his successor had failed as well, and then they
do that all the time in Italy, don't they?
And he was still sacked in the season, and then he went to Chievo, and he won 1 in like his first few months, and it didn't go well for him, and he was sacked. So, you know, hasn't quite done it in the 2 high profile jobs he's had in Italy, but he has got promotions on his CV. He has got success of keeping teams, smaller teams, with a limited budget in the top league. So that's a good thing for us. And it just looks like, I was reading some stuff from Frank Smith that we had on last week in the Watford Observer this week, and the difference between Zola and him is that this guy seems to be a much more of an appointment in line with the other Pozzo managers that are at Granada and Udinese over the years. He's very tactically focused. He's not a big name. He fits in with their philosophy. Whereas Zola really was, from what we're hearing now, was a lot of technical training. It was all about practicing the skills and the shooting and the passing. And when that worked on the pitch, we tore teams apart. But he didn't really have a tactical plan B or any other way to change it, which is what we saw this season when it went wrong. He couldn't really do anything about it. Whereas Zaninho likes to spend hours and hours and hours each week practicing the shape of the team, depending on who's going to be playing at the weekend, the opposition. He's a lot, very tactically focused, less, you know, so about the technical side of things, it seems. So there's a shift in emphasis there, and we'll see whether that, you know, can reverse our fortunes. But it's a decent point. But he doesn't speak English, which is a concern for me. There is a couple of the support staff, the physio, I think, speaks English and can translate, but I want him to, you know, learn that as soon as he can, because I think that's very important.
A new manager in at Barnsley as well, the old manager, Danny Wilson, the one that got him into the Premier League many moons ago, has gone back in there. Not a bad first result, 0-0 at Leeds, and also a team, well, who perhaps could be changing manager over the next week or so, are Millwall, because there's been a lot of pressure on Steve Lomas. Terrible reaction. We talked about the Mansfield fans being up in arms at Paul Cox earlier. I don't think it quite was on a par with what happened at the Den after they lost 2-0 at home to Middlesbrough, live on Sky on Saturday evening. And Steve Lomas under pressure from a lot of the fans, DC.
Indeed. And I posted on Twitter the other day.
You did.
An open letter to the chairman, John Berylson, from at Millwall Ant. And he claims to be speaking on behalf of a lot of the fans, and he really savaged Steve Lomas and everything that's happened at the club since he took over. I mean, even before he actually signed the contract as manager, there was people saying they wanted him out. The banner was hung on the gate saying Lomas out before it had even been confirmed. So what chance did he have? But the results simply haven't been good enough, have they? They've been battered several times. Your away form has been terrible. They have picked up the odd result at home. And speaking to a couple of Millwall fans that I know, one of them has been vehemently against Lomas from the start, and I always text him Lomas in every time they get a draw or a win, but he still wants him out. And another one is kind of a bit more considered about things, and has said that, yeah, the results haven't always been great, but at least I'm going to games now knowing that I'm going to be entertained. And he's seen entertaining games, he's seen plenty of goals. They've scored a fair few goals at home. As in contrast to last season, that terrible run in the second half of last season, where it was just terrible, terrible football, even if they did win. But ultimately, I think results will tell at the end of the day, won't they? And they, you know, losing 2-0 in what looked a terrible game against Middlesbrough on Saturday evening.
It's grim. It was an awful game of football.
He doesn't look as though he's really up for it, I don't think. He did look a bit of a defeated figure, didn't he, on the bench. And that was, and again, something mentioned in the letters to the chairman. It seems as though Neil Harris, the assistant, is kind of the one who's there heading every ball on the touchline. Does that actually matter or not? I don't know. It's something that people will stick on a lot. I don't know if it really makes much of a difference. It's what I think goes on the training pitch in the dressing room that's the really important thing. But the results aren't there at the moment, and you know, another manager would probably be given more time by the fans, but Steve Lomas was always going to be this way. He had to hit the ground running, but he hasn't done so.
Well, that could be a change just made over the next week, so keep your eye on that. Into League One, congratulations to Lewis Carey. Bristol City made a club record equaling 645th appearance. That's a hell of a lot of games.
Do you know who he's equaled it with?
I've got it written down in front of me. But I don't know how to say it. John Attio.
Yeah.
There you go. Did he play for Watford, did he?
No.
All right, I thought there might have been a reason why he knew that. That game finished 1-1 at Notts County. At the top of the league, tell you what, they couldn't resist a good Slade on top at Christmas gag, could they? Leighton Orient still stay top, but they did lose 3-2 at home to John Gregory's Crawley. Nicky Adams' goal, the chip, absolutely wonderful.
Brilliant.
And speaking of great goals of the weekend, the first one for Peterborough by, and I want to pronounce this name correctly, Kossian Clay. An absolutely unbelievable strike.
Oh, that's how you pronounce it. I've never been sure.
Well, that's what they did on the Football League show, so I'm just taking their word for it, which might not be the best thing thinking about it. And the second goal, one more time before Christmas. Do, do, do. Let's all do the conga. Do, do, do. Brit a samba longer. He's back. You got one. Preston 0, Brentford 3. Brentford's unbeaten run continues. I think that was Preston's first defeat in a long, long time. First defeat in 12 games in all competitions for Preston. 9 wins in 10 for Brentford. Stunning start by Mark Warburton. They're right in the mix now.
Yeah, well, he's just taken on. Rosler had got them playing well again after a shaky start. And Warburton's just continued that, and now they're bang in it, and it looks like, as it was last season, remember this sort of time last season, there was about 6 teams, wasn't there, within a couple of points of each other at the top of League One. We thought Leighton Orient might run away with it, but they've been pegged back a little bit. Wolves, you know, I've always fancied Wolves to come through, and they have at the moment. They'd be the team, out of all of those, they'd be the team that I'd be most confident of because of the players they've got, you know, the size of the club there. They'll have money, I think, to strengthen in January if they need to. Kenny Jackett, I admire greatly as a manager. Are the others, you can all see, Brentford, are they going to wobble again? Are they going to, the bad memories of last season's failure going to come back to haunt them? Maybe not. Leighton Orient, the perennial overachievers in terms of promotion race, can they hold their nerve and avoid doing what Tranmere did last season? I don't think they'll slip as far as that, but they are going to have to. They're going to be mentally tested. I think they've got that small squad which we talked about earlier in the season. So will Russell Slade be able to bring in a player or two? You know, Preston have now got to bounce back from what was a really bad defeat for them to lose against your promotion rivals 3-0. You know, their credentials are now whether they can bounce back in the next game.
Good wins for Swindon, also Walsall at the weekend, and MK Dons, who beat Port Vale by 3-0. Interesting stat as well that I learned, Sheffield United drawing 0-0 at Stevenage. Sheffield United have scored the least goals of any team in League One. The least number of goals. They've never replaced Ched Evans, have they, ever, since he left the club. OK, right, down into League Two, and Chesterfield have gone top for Christmas after they won 2-0 away at Exeter, but it's extremely tight up there, as you can see if you look at the table. We mentioned Fleetwood losing 2-0 to Cheltenham earlier on. Also up at the top there, you've got Scunthorpe. This is incredible. Russ Wilcox has gone in after the departure of Brian Laws. Four wins in five games, I believe it is. Five unbeaten.
I mean, he's got to get the job, but I think it also just kind of... When Laws was sacked, I disagreed with the decision, and I still do, because I don't think there was much wrong. They were on a decent enough run. They weren't far away from the playoff positions at that time. I think they lost to Grimsby, didn't they, in the FA Cup?
Yes, they did.
One of his final games, and that sort of that happens. You know, teams do lose cup games to lower league opposition. The league is where it's at, and they're flying now. They're now third, and Wilcox surely has got to get the job, hasn't he?
You certainly think so. And we can't finish the show without mentioning the man in League Two who did lose his job this week, Mr. Aidy Boothroyd. It's all come to an end. 6 months ago or 7 months ago, there he was on the brink of a glorious promotion at Wembley. And it's all come crashing down to a bottom of the Football League after that 4-1 thumping at home by Wickham on Saturday, who themselves have been on a really long run of games without a win. And he's been given the bullet finally. Just couldn't go on any longer, could it, that form?
No, and I think it's all rooted in the fact that they lost majority of their best players in the summer. It's always hard to replace them, especially at League Two level when you don't have a lot of money going round. And it looked like there might have been a brief resurgence a few weeks ago, and they got a few loan players in, like Ricky Ravenhill being one of them, who I know Northampton fans have been pleased with. But the results, again, as we were just saying about Steve Lomas, the results are where it's at, and that's always going to be the thing that does you in at the end of the day. They're bottom of the entire Football League. He came in and they were right down the bottom of the Football League, and he turned it round, saved them, got them to Wembley, but now they've regressed and they've gone right back to where he started. It's back to square one. It's the end of Aidy Boothroyd at Northampton Town, and I wonder
whether
the end of Aidy Boothroyd as a manager in the Football League. Could he perhaps, he's always been spoken of very highly as a coach. I remember I worked with someone once that went to an open coaching session put on by the FA, and Boothroyd was doing the coaching, and they were blown away by how good he was with the players and how he broke everything down and explained the whole thing. And certainly as a coach, as a youth coach and working his way up, he's got a very good reputation. As a manager, he's come undone now at pretty much every club he's been at. He's had success when he goes in, and then things happen and he can't turn it round. And again, this is what's happened at Northampton Town. Would he pitch up as an assistant somewhere, maybe, or a coach somewhere, or maybe he'd go do a John Gregory and go abroad somewhere? I don't know. But it's going to be very tough for him, I think, to get another job, certainly in the near future.
Okay, well, that is pretty much it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. A reminder, if you want to get in touch, if you are an overseas listener, you can email wagyupodcast@gmail.com or go to wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. Oh, that's someone getting in touch right now, I think. Also, you can go to the website wearegoingup.co.uk to read the blogs. The SoundCloud page is soundcloud.com/wagyupodcast, and the Twitter is @wagyupodcast. And finally, a lot of plugs in one thing, the Audible offer is still there at audible.co.uk/goingup. Enjoy the feast of football this week. You're looking forward to it?
Enjoy the feast of food.
Well, enjoy the feast of football and the feast of food.
Am I looking forward to the football? Probably looking forward more to the food than I am the football, actually, at the moment.
Well, do you notice we nearly got through the show about me mentioning that Bury are second bottom of the Football League there. So I think I'm with you on that one.
Have you got on Boxing Day?
We've got Scunthorpe at home, and I should be there. I should be going.
You're
going
to lose that, aren't you? Yeah. We've got Millwall at home, so I mean, we've said it against Scunthorpe.
This is going to be my
Sheffield,
first.
Said against Sheffield Wednesday, we've got to be beating these teams at home. But yeah. On form, we're probably the worst team in the league. So
this could be my first home game in a long, long time, because obviously we work Saturdays. But I'm going to be home. Hopefully the weather relents, and I'll get my first ever visit to the JD Stadium, won't I? In its new form. Right, that is it. Thank you very much for listening, and have a lovely Christmas. We'll be back at some point just before the new year. So one more show to come from us in 2013. So we'll speak to you in about 7 days' time. Merry Christmas.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.